Radio Prague News.
Prime Minister Petr Nečas says the decision on whether to aid the Eurozone via the IMF will be made by the government. The TOPO 9 party has put forward MP Alena Hanakova for the post of Minister of Culture. And the U.S. Senate has confirmed Norman Eisen in the post of U.S. Ambassador to Prague. Prime Minister Petr Nečas says the decision on whether to aid the Eurozone via the IMF will be made by the government rather than the Czech National Bank. For his own part, the Prime Minister said he is opposed to participation. The government is set to discuss the matter on Wednesday, though it is not certain that a vote will be taken. Mr. Nečas said he is aware of the complicated political situation caused by the Czech Republic's reticence, but emphasized that he would not offer a stronger statement because clear conditions for an agreement between European leaders had not yet been given. Eurozone representatives last week agreed to give the IMF a 200 billion euro loan, which would then be lent to the EU states in economic crisis. Foreign Minister Karl Schwarzenberg has voiced his support for providing 90 billion crowns towards the agreement. The TOPO 9 party has put forward MP Alena Hanakova for the post of Minister of Culture. Ms. Hanakova is a member of the Mayors and Independence Party, which is associated with TOPO 9. A movement by some Czech artists to appoint Arts Academy Chancellor Ivo Matej was heard by the TOPO 9 party, but unraveled after Mr. Matej failed to reach an agreement with party chairman Karel Schwarzenberg. The outgoing culture minister, Jiří Beser, handed his resignation to President Klaus on Tuesday afternoon. His resignation was compelled by the fact that he had failed to report property and business interests in the United States in his property statement. The Mayors and Independence Party has said he will stay on as deputy chairman as he was not guilty of any legal wrongdoing. The U.S. Senate on Monday confirmed Norman Eisen in the post of U.S. Ambassador to Prague, overcoming opposition by Republican Senator Charles Grassley. Senator Grassley successfully blocked Mr. Eisen's nomination to the post a year ago, prompting President Obama to bypass the regular confirmation process during a Senate recess and name him to a temporary one-year term due to expire in January. Senator Grassley's claim that in 2009 Mr. Eisen violated the law by the manner of his dismissal of a high-ranking employee was dismissed by Republican senators, who pointed out that a court had exonerated Mr. Eisen from the allegations of improper conduct. The acting ambassador was confirmed in office by a 70-16 majority. Now turning briefly to the weather, conditions over the coming days are expected to be partly cloudy with scattered showers and daytime temperatures of between 4 and 8 degrees Celsius. My name's Christian Falvey. That's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's show, the Prime Minister says the government cannot afford to make a rash decision on whether to help save the euro, both in terms of a loan and support for an intergovernmental treaty. Five injured Libyans arrive in Prague for treatment, and in today's main feature, we'll look at a new book out called Bombs Over Prague, taking us back to the end of the Second World War. And of course, we'll end with another Czech lesson. All that coming up, so please do stay with us. The EU's plan to save the euro has in recent days divided the Czech political scene. While the fiercely Eurosceptic President Václav Klaus said the country should stay out of the planned loan to the IMF, Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg noted that the Czech Republic would have little choice but to approve it. On Tuesday, Czech Prime Minister Petr Nečas came out to clarify the government's position and hinted that if it were up to him, the government would say no. Jan Richter has the story.
Prime Minister Petr Nečas represented the Czech Republic at the crucial EU summit last week that outlined the way for saving the euro by tightening fiscal rules for eurozone members and by lending 200 billion euro to the International Monetary Fund. On Tuesday, Mr. Nečas became the last Czech political heavyweight to specify what course of action his country is likely to take. As he told reporters, his centre-right cabinet will wait for more details on both the new Eurozone treaty and the planned Euro loan to the IMF.
kdy existuje pouze prázdný bílý papír.
Right now, when there is not much more than a blank sheet of paper, and even the name of the future treaty might still change, I think that it would be politically short-sighted to come out with strong statements that we should sign that piece of paper.
In the Czech Prime Minister's view, the new treaty would establish different conditions for Eurozone members on the one hand and EU member states outside the monetary union on the other. In Mr. Necas's words, the new treaty would only offer the proverbial stick to the countries without the euro that will join the pact.
For Eurozone members, there will be a carrot in that they will be able to draw funds from the EU's stabilization tools. But for those countries outside the Eurozone, all that's left is the stick, the obligation to adhere to the new fiscal rules without the option of relying on the EU tools.
The Czech Republic will also soon have to decide whether or not it will provide some 3.5 billion euro to a new loan to the International Monetary Fund, which is one of the steps agreed at Friday's EU summit in Brussels. After Czech President Václav Klaus warned against it, and the governor of the Czech National Bank, Miroslav Singer, even indicated that the central bank might not approve the loan, Prime Minister Necas made it perfectly clear that the decision would be the government's alone.
Either the Czech government decides to stay out of the loan and will say so openly without blaming anyone else, or the government decides it will take part, though personally I'm against such a move. In that case, the government will have to guarantee it will find the necessary means.
According to the Prime Minister, the Czech Republic, Denmark, Poland, the UK and Sweden are the only EU countries outside the Eurozone that can take part in the loan to the IMF, as the remaining five are already taking part in the fund's relief programs. When asked whether he was concerned a Czech refusal to take part in the loan to the IMF would place the country on the periphery of the EU, Mr. Necas said this was certainly something to take into consideration.
Ano, já uznávám, že v případě, že by Česká republika byla jediná z těch pěti zemí, které mohou poskytnout tuto půjčku.
Yes, I admit that if the Czech Republic remains the only country out of the five non-Eurozone members not to take part in the loan, it would be a serious political issue, which could in fact be the only reason why we should join, provided the UK takes part as well. On the other hand, the Czech government does not now have the necessary data to make a decision.
K dispozici všechna fakta, která jsou pro tato rozhodnutí potřebná.
The Prime Minister ended his appearance in front of the media with an appeal to his colleagues, asking them to refrain from simplifying the issue. But his words on Tuesday did little to overcome the division of the coalition government over if and how the Czech Republic should take part in saving the euro. The government remains split between the Topo 9 party, which favours Czech participation in the EU strategy, and the Civic Democrats and Public Affairs parties, which would most likely prefer the country stays out as long as it can.
Jan Richter with that report. Moving on now, a Czech military plane brought five injured Libyans to Prague for treatment on Monday night. All are in need of surgery, which overcrowded hospitals in their homeland are unable to provide. An appeal from Libya for European countries to help treat their wounded has led to the Czech government extending its Medevac aid program for children to adults with serious medical problems. Pavla Horáková has more.
الجرح طبعا دخلت الرصاصة من هنا ثم انفجرت في داخل رجل ثم طلعت.
Abdel was seriously wounded in a shootout with Gaddafi troops in his hometown of Zawiya. He says a cartridge exploded in his right leg, leaving a 3-centimeter hole in the bone. Doctors in the local hospital fixed the injury, but in the current conditions were unable to provide the bone replacement surgery that would help Abdel walk again. There are hundreds of others who share the same fate. Filip Burget, a doctor from Prague's General Teaching Hospital, was sent out to help select patients for treatment in the Czech Republic and accompany them here.
The situation in Libyan hospitals right now does not enable any kind of complicated surgery. There is no chance to conduct even arthroscopic examinations.
Local hospitals are bursting at the seams, and even after the worst of the fighting ceased and the stream of wounded thinned, the situation remains critical. There are many who were only given life-saving surgery and require follow-up operations. Walid Turki, a doctor who has been serving almost around the clock at a hospital in Tripoli, says there is only so much they can do.
We have a huge number of cases as a wounded, so the capacity of our hospitals and the capacity of our doctor to handle all these cases is not that big.
The five injured Libyans who were sent to Prague will each require several operations, including complicated plastic surgery. In the meantime, two Libyan doctors have come to Prague for training and should in future select other patients in their homeland who would be given medical treatment in the Czech Republic.
My thanks to Pavla Horáková for that report. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Now, in this week's edition of Czechs in History, Christian Falvey looks at a new book out on the fate of Prague at the end of World War II.
For all the suffering that Bohemia and Moravia endured during World War II, relatively little of the damage was physical. Prague escaped the terrible bombing that left so many of the ancient cities of Europe wasted. There were incidents, however, two in particular in the last year of the war, that brought large-scale destruction and great loss of life. The first was during the bombing of Dresden, when a cloud of American B-17s arrived over central Prague due to a navigational error and let fly more than 150 tons of bombs, killing 701 people, wounding over 1,000, and flattening 93 buildings. Error or not, Prague had been a secondary target. The second sortie, 1 month later, was no accident, and it targeted the industrial area in northeastern Prague. Three waves of more than 500 planes pummeled the area for about an hour and a half. Another 370 people were killed in that event. While these were key events of the war, there was hardly any quality photographic record until just a few years ago, when a set of photographs was brought to the attention of the Military History Institute. Their creator, one Stanislav Marshall, had died a few years before and had never in his long life shared them with the public. Perhaps he kept his memories to himself because during the war he had been employed as a photographer for a Nazi youth organization. But that was also the thing that gave him access to the events that he photographed in February and March of 1945 and make a major contribution to military history. A new book by the well-known historian Jan Uhlich of the Institute of Military History called Bomby na Prahu, Bombs Over Prague, presents a little-seen side of this city's torments towards the close of World War II.
Tenhle ten soubor je výjimečný téměř úplně vším. Málo kdy se setkáme se skutečností, že by...
The set of photographs is outstanding in just about every possible way. It doesn't often happen that a photographer would make such a series and let it lie for more than a half a century without anyone noticing. What makes it so unique is the huge number of fantastic shots, and photo historians are very excited because they had no idea that someone like Stanislav Marshall was taking such high-quality photos in such quantity at that time. When I first had them in my hands in 2008, I was simply thrilled because I realized that no one, even the Czech press agency, has shots like this.
You can very quickly see what makes these photographs so marvelous. They capture central moments of a largely unseen moment in the conflict, but they also do so with excellent artistic grace. The Defense Ministry calls the photographs exceptional. Who then was this man, almost a complete unknown? After the war, he worked for 14 years in a steel foundry until receiving a disability pension. For the 30 years after that, he devoted himself again to photography, focusing on classical music and theater. He died in 2004 at the age of 94. 6 years after that, when the photographs were released, his daughter Jana spoke with Radio Prague.
It was very unique and he never ever show it anywhere because I don't know why he didn't want us as children to look at it because he was afraid it will be too emotional for us. And now I understand it more because I saw it once and I remember I couldn't sleep because our father really took that time very personally, and he was always emotional long after this event. He was always, when we went through these places, he always talked about it, and you could see how unhappy he was, that the memories of this event was still in him all life. You can't get over it, I think, easily. Yeah.
A particularly interesting aspect of the photographs is that Stanislav Marshall was able to photograph both of the American raids of 1945. Apparently, the youth organization he worked for was sent to clean up the rubble. The February raid had nothing like the force of the one in late March, but it was twice as deadly, sweeping through the central districts of Vinohrady, Vršovice, and Nusle. A bomb that later made the space for the famous dancing house killed a number of children, including three whose mother survived only because she was in the next room. The fact that that raid was intended for Dresden shows what different strategies the Allies had for German and occupied targets.
Rozdíly v těch dvou bombardováních jsou naprosto jednoznačné. Ten první z toho 14. února.
There was a huge difference between the strikes. The first was a navigational error. We are almost 100% certain of that today. The second was aimed at industry and at limiting victims as much as possible. It was scheduled for a Sunday to make sure that workers and machines wouldn't be there. It was targeted on Libeň, Vysočany and the airport, and they used different types of bombs. People knew from the February bombing that cellars were not the place to hide. Many had collapsed in the first strike, and bodies were still being found in the 1970s. So on the outskirts of Prague, people ran into the fields, but there they were killed by the shrapnel.
Prague was, of course, not the only Czech city struck during the Second World War, nor was it the worst hit. The western industrial center of Plzeň suffered a hard fate for the presence of the Škoda Works, now known for their cars, but even in the First World War reputed for the powerful weaponry they manufactured there. Kolín and Záluží u Mostu were also targeted for their storages of gasoline, which was worth its weight in gold towards the end of the war. All in all, the protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia was relatively safe until mid-1944. Back to Stanislav Marshall, though, a little-known Czech being carried along by the 20th century, who will now be known by historians as just the right man in just the right place. Dr. Jan Uhliet again.
Když se podíváme na věk toho fotografa, Stanislav Marshall byl ročník 19.
Another interesting thing about Stanislav Marshall's story is his age. He was born in 1910, so he was around 35 when he made his 250-some-odd photos, and they say something about that age. It's not just the speed with which he was able to move from one bombing scene to another, but a certain kind of courage with which he aimed his camera even at things that other photographers shied away from, namely human remains. He captured bodies torn apart by bombs and other exceptionally sorrowful things. He had the energy to be down on the square taking pictures of the funeral ceremony 1 minute and to be up in the church steeple taking pictures the next. If he had been 10 years older or younger, the pictures would probably look completely different. I think his age played an irreplaceable role in his achievement.
Jan Uhlíř from the Czech Institute of Military History, ending that edition of Czechs in History by Christian Falvey. Now, in the remaining time we have, we're offering you another Czech lesson. In view of its enormous popularity, Radio Prague is repeating its Soundcheck miniseries, and today's Czech lesson is with Jan Richter.
Povahu mám normální až na jednu věc, já si nevzpomínám, zapomínám, nevzpomínám. Paměť slouží na pár dní a pak spadla klec.
Welcome to another edition of Sound Check, Radio Prague's language series, in which you have a chance to learn interesting phrases through song lyrics. Today we'll hear a song called Sklerotická, or Sklerotic, by the Eben Brothers from their 1984 album Malé písně do tmy, or Small Songs for the Dark. The phrase to listen for is spadla klec.
Paměť slouží na pár dní a pak spadla klec. Já si nevzpomínám, zapomínám, nevzpomínám.
The word klec means cage in English, while spadla is the feminine past tense formed from the verb spadnout, which translates as fall or drop into English. As the Czech language has no present perfect tense, the phrase spadla klec therefore means the cage has dropped. In English, you could perhaps say that the game is up.
Paměť slouží na pár dní a pak spadla klec. Já si nevzpomínám, zapomínám, nevzpomínám.
Spadla klec is usually used to suggest that something has been definitely and abruptly resolved. Think of a situation, for instance, of riding on the metro without a ticket when the inspectors show up and find you out. That's it for you. Spadla klec. You're trapped.
Povahu mám normální až na jednu věc. Já si nevzpomínám, zapomínám, nevzpomínám. Paměť slouží na pár dní a pak spadla klec. Já si nevzpomínám, zapomínám, nevzpomínám.
Marek, the middle of the three Eben brothers and the group singer and author of lyrics, is complaining in this song that he is always forgetting things. His memory only works for a couple of days, and then spadla klec, the cage has dropped. Although I'm not sure the phrase is employed in its usual context here, it does point out to the fact that he's in trouble after his memory has become blank.
Paměť slouží na pár dní a pak spadla klec. Já si nevzpomínám, zapomínám.
I am sure the origins of the phrase spadla klec have something to do with catching animals onto which the cage drops, trapping them inside. In a broader sense, you could also say je povšem, it's all over.
Paměť slouží na pár dní a pak spadla klec. Já si nevzpomínám, zapomínám, nevzpomínám. Příště si udělám uzel na kapesníku, zabráním tak úniku informací z hlavy. Příště si udělám uzel na své paměti, zůstanou tak zajetí aktuální zprávy. Prostřednictvím uzlíku budu vědět víc, já si nevzpomínám, zapomínám, nevzpomínám. Pak budu mít v malíku, co jsem to chtěl říct, já si nevzpomínám, zapomínám, nevzpomínám.
That edition of Soundcheck was with Jan Richter, and you will find the entire Soundcheck series at www.radio.cz, along with all of Radio Prague's programs in text and sound. And I'm afraid that's all we have for you today. Should you like to contact us, then please write to english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you. This is Danielle Lazarová saying thanks for joining us and take care.